Welcome to Trade Off, the podcast about the people, politics, and power inside Europe's trade policy. So today we're talking about trade and agriculture. Food and farming are topics that are incredibly close to people, socially, politically, culturally, economically. And the EU, its products are exported throughout the world. Producers have a lot to gain from trade. But there are also sensitivities. And it's not an easy equation. There's a balancing act there. So today, to help me decode and unpick that balancing act, I have three specialists. First, Jean-Marc Chaumet, Director for Economic Affairs at CNIL, representing the interests of the whole French dairy chain, from farmers to processors to traders to retailers to the food service industry. Thanks for being here, Jean-Marc.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Second, Miriam Garcia Ferrer, member of Executive Vice President Dombrovskis' cabinet responsible for trade and agriculture, and a former spokesperson on the topic, no less. Thanks for being here, Miriam.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Last but not least, Luis Caroso Jimenez, Acting Director for International Affairs at the Commission's Directorate General for Agriculture.
Thanks for the invitation, Tom.
Thank you all for joining me today. In every episode of Trade Off, we start with just that, a trade-off. I bring something for the guests and they bring something in exchange. But today is a bit more complicated because there are four of us and we all have something. So maybe let's enter a more free market situation where we can figure out what we want from each other. Let me start. So I have brought a little selection of cereal bars because cereals are the largest category of EU agri-food exports at 10%, but they're closely followed, Jean-Marc, by dairy products at 9%. So a selection of cereal bars. What have you brought, Luis?
I have brought a bottle, only one, so I foresee a fight here, of olive oil. The European Union is the world's largest exporter and producer of olive oil. Is produced in a series of member states by thousands of farmers and hundreds of cooperatives. It's exported all over the world. It is tasty. It is healthy. It is protected by a number of geographical indications, and access to third markets is being made possible through free trade agreements.
And you, Miriam?
I brought an emblematic EU agri-food product, which is chocolate, of course, and which shows very well the linkage between trade and agriculture, because the cocoa beans are sourced from abroad. So one of them comes from Santo Domingo, and the other one comes from Costa Rica, and the third one is from Vietnam. As I was based in Vietnam, I thought it would be interesting to share also how these small producers in Vietnam are trying to follow our production of these high-quality products and also label them in a way that they are well presented. And on top of that, it's products that are organic and coming from fair trade.
Jean-Marc, what have you brought for us? This is, looks like a very significant item sitting next to you here.
Yes, I've brought a cheese board with half a dozen of cheese. It was very difficult to choose only one cheese, and it was impossible also to bring a piece of the 1,200 cheeses that we have in France. So you have here a glimpse of the French diversity of cheeses, knowing that one-third of the milk produced in France is used to produce cheese, and that cheese is what do we export the most as a dairy product.
So what's everyone got their eye on? Also, what's the exchange rate of cheese to cereal bars?
I have three bars, so I'm happy to give one to each of you. You just need to decide which one.
Luis, what are you thinking?
If I can choose, I would go for the Costa Rica, because this is where I had my honeymoon.
I personally, I have my eye on the cheeses. What would you recommend out of the set?
Oh, well, they're all very good. But I would like to eat the cheeses with the sweet chocolate bars to see what is the best association.
Well, look, I feel like there's a lot of decisions to be made, and it would not be fair to put you all under pressure right at the beginning of this podcast. So how about we just have an agreement to sit down at the end and we'll have a little trade exchange and feast together.
Fully agree.
Excellent idea.
Great.
Great. So now before we dig in, I want to start with you, the people sitting around the table with me. I want to know how you came to work at this nexus of trade and agriculture. What is it that interested you in this area? What attracted you to it? Maybe it's starting with you, Luis.
I don't have myself an agricultural background. My family has, and my grandparents were farmers. My father worked in the Spanish Ministry for Agriculture, and myself an agricultural engineer. I have spent most of the summers over my university times working in farms all over the place. So that's my natural choice.
And what about you, Miriam? How did you come to be in this area?
In fact, I have been working in two countries for the EU delegation as head of the trade section. And these two countries, which were first Colombia and then Vietnam, and they have a very strong agriculture sector. And on top of that, we were negotiating, concluding and ratifying an FTA, which means there were plenty of opportunities for the farming sector. And what I could see is that actually these countries were very concerned about competition from EU products, and they feared they would not be able to compete because of the quality. So I think this is something we will need to discuss today, how we can see opportunities and benefits for both sides.
Jean-Marc, what about you? What brought you to this area?
I've always been very interested in biology, so I became an agricultural engineer. But I've always been interested in international affairs, considering my family background, considering that both my parents were born abroad. And my first job once graduated was in the French embassy in China, when China became a member of WTO. And so this was my first encounter with the trade and agricultural issues.
Okay, but then why the French dairy sector? What makes it so special in your view?
The French dairy sector is one very important agricultural sector. There are like 45,000 farms right now in France, and the whole dairy chain employs like 300,000 people. Right now in almost everywhere in France, and especially in rural areas, in small villages and small areas. And we are also one of the biggest contributors to the French agricultural trade surplus, because we are between 3 and 4 billion euros in trade surplus.
How you see EU trade supporting agriculture in Europe? Maybe starting with you, Luis.
The European Union agricultural sector is very much oriented into international trade. The European Union, and this is something often forgotten, is the main world exporter of agri-food. And we are the third more important importer. We do both things, and we rank amongst the most important players both in exporting and in importing. We do export a variety of produce all over the world that are recognized for the quality and for the essential characteristics that make them different from the domestic production. But we also import agri-food, primary foods that are needed to be subsequently processed into our food chain in order to produce high added value produce. International trade is the natural vocation of the European agriculture, both for the import and for the export.
Could you give me something to hang on to, something to illustrate it? Could you give me an example?
If I can think about an agreement that it is relatively recent and is producing already positive effects for our agriculture sector, is Canada. Canada is giving us access to parts of the Canadian market that before the entry into force of this agreement were simply blocked for us. But I could imagine that Jean-Marc may have to say about that.
France is a net exporter of dairy products. Exports outside of the EU is very important for the French dairy sector. And we export more valuable product outside of the EU than inside the EU. And what Luis has said is very important and interesting. It means that CETA was beneficial to the French dairy sector. It has a positive outcome. And the exports of cheeses to CETA have almost doubled since 2018, and in value as well as in volume. And this has a great importance, knowing that for 10 or 15 years, the export toward third countries have been increasing a lot faster than the export toward the EU countries.
Maybe first of all, to complement but what Luis and Jean-Marc already said, right now, 44% of the total EU trade in goods and services going in both directions are covered by the EU's 32 preferential trade agreements with 74 countries. So just to give you an idea of the magnitude of our preferential trade with countries. Free trade agreements are important because they open new markets for farmers. It's not just about lowering tariffs. It's also about removing all the non-tariff barriers, all the regulations, all the requirements that third countries have in place that hinder access to those markets. And then I would like to give an example where I was very much involved when I was based in Colombia. We had a trade agreement which entered into force in 2013, but that didn't mean that automatically the EU could export its agri-food products. And particularly here, I'm talking about meat and vegetables. There were many other barriers and many procedures to comply with. And we try to engage with the Colombian authorities to make them understand that we are as a whole, as a single entity. So they put in place, following many exchanges and interactions, a single procedure for the export of EU animal and vegetable products. And since then, since the agreement entered into force, we have seen that meat products increased by 1,837%. And dairy produce by 1,549%. So that's huge and shows how through trade agreements we can really make a difference and ensure that exports can really take place. Because it's not just about, as I said, removing the duties. It's about making sure that the system is in place and that exports are happening.
Especially for smaller exporters as well, this stuff is incredibly important because the administrative burden in that context is huge, right?
Exactly. We always say that the FTAs benefit mostly the small companies. The large companies, they have the capacity already to comply with the rules. They have lawyers. They have all the procedures in place. Whereas it's the small businesses that need this extra help to be able to enter third country markets.
But it's not all kind of benefits and opportunities. There are also sensitivities. And it's not always just about exporting. It's about protecting our farmers from cheap imports too, right?
This is one of our main tasks. We are all in the Commission working for the benefit of European citizens. And of course, this includes European farmers and the European Union agri-food sector. And when it's about a deal, and there are certain sectors that you have said, Tom, that are sensitive because we are less competitive. These changes in relation to the trade partner we are negotiating with, of course, is not the same negotiating with Japan, for instance, than negotiating with Canada. So first of all, we need to take into consideration the partner with whom we are negotiating, and then the sectors at stake. For instance, you can rapidly think about beef, about poultry, about rice. It depends a little bit. How do we take this? We do everything that we can do in the negotiations in order to secure an acceptable agreement, meaning that the volumes that we are ready to negotiate are small and absorbable by the domestic demand in the European Union. When we open quotas, which are limited volumes for which a smaller or no import duty applies, we split the volume into produce that are more sensitive for us and some others that remain in B, for instance, but it is frozen with a lower value and therefore less, undercutting less our market.
When designing these approaches or thinking about these approaches, you also need a certain amount of contact with the industry, the representatives, the farmers themselves. How do you connect with them?
We speak with them every day, every week. The conversations are not always easy, but are constructive. And our goal is very clear. We are working for the European Union citizen, including the European Union farmers. And our goal is to make sure that every agreement that the Union concludes is positive for agriculture as a whole, as it is positive for the other sectors of the European Union economy.
With these sensitivities in mind, could you give us some specific examples from some specific negotiations?
First, I would like to reiterate what Luis said at the beginning. Imports should not be seen as a negative feature. Imports are important. We need them. We rely on them. We are not self-sufficient. And also, they help us when there is undersupply. We have been experiencing some weather events in Europe in the recent months, which means that for certain commodities, some cereals, for example, we haven't produced enough and then we need the import. So then, of course, there are sensitivities, and we have a very clear example, a recent one, with Australia. With Australia, we are very close to conclusion, and we had planned high-level meetings last October, but everything collapsed very unexpectedly because Australia came back to us with very unrealistic demands on the most sensitive products. So this shows that we are not shying away from moving out of the negotiating table when we see that we are not properly protecting and defending our farmers.
But it's not just about protecting the interests of the farmers as well. It's also about protecting consumers, because the EU has some of the highest health and safety food standards in the world. And this plays into it too, right?
Exactly. So we never negotiate our sanitary and phytosanitary requirements. These are the same for EU products and for imports. And that's something that is not part of the negotiation process of an FTA, and third countries have to comply with. And when I was based in Colombia and Vietnam, these countries were very nervous because they were telling us, we are not able to comply with your standards. So we will have an FTA where you will start exporting to us, but we will not be able to access the EU market because we don't have the same requirements. And that's why we need to cooperate and work together with third countries, because trade agreements should be seen as a win-win situation.
Mm. From a sectoral perspective, Jean-Marc, how do you think about these high health and safety standards?
Yes, we need import when we're not self-sufficient. But when we are self-sufficient and even have a surplus, maybe we don't always need import. Trade should be a win-win situation, and trade should be a level playing field. So it's true that in most cases, the agreements have been positive, have been beneficial, including to French agriculture and French dairy sector. But it will be even more so if we ensure that our standards are respected. Producers in third countries who want to export to the EU market must comply with the same requirements as the EU farmers, environmental, social, and sanitary requirements.
So standards are important, but there are different types of standards. There's these non-negotiable ones, the standards to protect the safety and the health of EU consumers. But then there's another type of standard, one where the Commission has a slightly different approach. These ones about process and production, standards to address environmental, ethical, social concerns. What's the Commission's approach on this second type of standard?
What we have been doing in the European Union is to take it on a case-by-case basis. So wherever we saw that there was really a need to address this, we have put in place autonomous measures. We have the example of deforestation. We have the example of CBAM also. Then we are also applying certain EU standards on the use of pesticides to help protect bee populations, which helps to ensure that farmers' crops can be adequately pollinated. But we cannot do it across the board. And we have to also take into account that this could backfire us, because third countries could be seeing us as having an extraterritorial application of our own norms. And the systems that we have in place very much differ. The agricultural landscape, the climate conditions are different, so you cannot apply necessarily the same methods when you produce products. And at the same time, this could backfire in the sense that if third countries start imposing their own production standards to our exports, we will not be able to export anymore. And we have to be very conscious, as we were saying at the beginning, we are an export powerhouse. If third countries close their markets to our exports, then we will be in real trouble.
And some sectors should not bear the brunt of the free trade agreement. For example, dairy farmers, they produce dairy, they produce milk, but they also sell meat. They also sell calves and cold cows. And so what happens to the beef sector also impacts the dairy farmers. So everything is interlinked, and this should be taken into account.
Luis, you wanted to come in there.
Yeah, on both what Miriam and Jean-Marc said, it's true that beef is a sensitive sector. And this is the reason when you go through all the agreements that we have concluded, the beef chapter is very special, and all our negotiation tricks are there in order to make sure that the result the overall result is acceptable. I have been working long enough in Rue de la Loi, just where we are recording this, to remember the demonstrations against CETA that took place some 6 or 7 years ago. And one of the claims was the European Union will be flooded with Canadian beef. First of all, that was not possible because, as I explained before, that was a volume that was granted to Canada. But now when we are not looking at what has actually happened in the last years, is that basically we are not importing any beef from Canada. We are in surplus. We are exporting some quantities of beef to Canada, and we are basically importing nothing. And what is the reason for that? It's the standards that Miriam referred to. And basically, it's the fact that we don't accept beef produced with hormones in the European Union. The Canadians do produce beef with hormones, and many other markets in the world accept this beef. So if they want to export to the European Union, they have to put in place a separate production system. And this is costly. So we find ourselves in a situation where, contrary to what was said by some experts, no beef at all has been imported from Canada, and this is a reality.
Yes, it is true that some FTAs open the doors to imports from third countries, and these third countries have not taken the opportunity yet to export to Europe, but the doors are open anyway. And it was not a foregone conclusion that these countries will not export to Europe. They might not do it now. They might do it in a few years, the time for them to be ready to respect some of the rules that EU put in place for these imports.
So we've talked about tariffs and we've talked about rules, but there's another area that's quite important to consider when we're talking about the export of high-quality EU products, and that's geographical indications, GIs.
We think that GI recognition is very important in a free trade agreement beyond the goal to reduce or remove tariff barriers, because GI recognition enables consumer to trust the quality product. It gives the consumer the guarantee of authenticity and quality linked to the origin. Also, it helps the farmers and the producers to market their product better and to protect their product from competitors trying to exploit their reputation and their know-how. So we think this GI recognition should always be at the top of the list when an FTA is negotiated, or even like with some countries, there are some specific standalone agreements of GIs, and we think this is a really good opportunity to also help not only French but EU exporters to export their genuine high-quality product through around the world.
Indeed, geographical indications are one of the flagships of European agriculture. We are exporting this model to the rest of the world. Most of the world is imitating us, if I may use the word, or finding inspiration in what we do to be a little bit more elegant. But this is an essential part of all the agreements we do. And for instance, in our conversation today, we have not yet mentioned Mercosur. There are 350 geographical indications from the European Union that will be protected in the vast territory of Mercosur through this agreement.
Indeed, that's a very good example. And that brings me also to mention Mercosur, which has a huge potential for our agriculture sector. It's a big market with very little preferential access from other partners. So we would be the first ones if we ever conclude an agreement. And the economic balance that we found in terms of market access is also really preserving the interest of our farmers. For example, for beef, the quotas we opened were very small and represent only 1.5% of EU consumption of beef.
But we have to be careful what kind of beef and what piece of beef we're talking about, because usually what is going to be imported is a very high-priced value pieces of beef, not the whole carcass, not the whole beef. And so this will compete to a small market in Europe about these high-value pieces. And so this is also, so we should not compare the whole EU beef market compared to the import, but the import compared to the small market of high-value pieces. So we should compare the two.
I think the example that Jean-Marc is bringing to the table is a very good one to illustrate that trading food is not like trading nails, with all my respect for the nail industry. And beef is very special. Sometimes we need to fine-tune our analysis, and macroeconomic figures are important, but this kind of refinement in our analysis is important. This is something that we do. If we came to volumes that, as Miriam explained, are small, it's precisely for this reason. The carcass we are talking about beef, the value of the cuts is very, very different. This explains why the volume is small. This explains why we have split the volume into frozen and fresh, with very different values. But indeed, this explains that beef is a sensitive sector.
Okay. So, to draw together this quite wide-ranging conversation, I want to ask whether there is a final thought, a final big idea about trade and agriculture that you would hope that our listeners would take away from this conversation today. Maybe starting with you, Luis.
When coming here to the recording studio, I checked the latest figures for 2023, and it turns out that we had a record surplus for the European agri-food sector of 70 billion. This is a record. That's part of the picture. The other part of the picture is a small beef producer somewhere in Massif Central who is vulnerable, who has got a small holding, who is insecure about being able to, for the kids to take over, if they are willing to do that. Our goal, that of the European Commission, is to find the balance between securing the best possible trade opportunities for our operators, being large companies or medium and sized companies, also for our farmers and our farming cooperatives, but also preserving what makes our agriculture unique and making so that the project of the Union, which is to have agriculture all over the place, remains a reality. So it's very important to have good figures. It is even better that if together good figures, we have a healthy farming sector.
Yes. I think the EU trade policy should help the EU agricultural sectors and French dairy, including the French dairy sector, to expand, to produce more, and to be able to export more also to the countries where we need this product. As you said, we are in surplus, in trade surplus. We should keep this trade surplus. We should maybe even expand it if the world needs it. And the EU trade policy should help us have a level playing field and help us expand this production.
And Miriam, final thought to you.
I think we need to work more in partnership with our countries, because it shows that when we do it together, we can build up success stories and we can do very good things. When I was in Vietnam and I used to travel a lot to explain the benefits of the trade agreements and to also dispel the fears of this agriculture sector that was afraid of increased competition from Europe, they were always organizing a small trade fair where they would showcase their products. And I was very impressed in this remote village in the middle of Vietnam, where this producer comes with a product that had the organic EU label. And this person could not even speak English, but they were very proud showing how they had managed to comply with the EU requirements. And this is something that for me shows how we can really make sure that we have this cooperation with producers, and how Europe has a lot to offer to these countries. But these countries have also a lot to offer to us.
Just like to add that when we export a lot of the dairy product, is also to meet the demand of high value product, but also in some countries also is to help some countries who don't produce enough dairy product to meet their demands, and to waiting for them to increase their dairy production and the milk production in the meantime, then we can export them some dairy product and help the consumers to consume some dairy product. And so I have to kind of feed the world in some way.
Well, look, we've covered a lot of ground. It's been really interesting. Thank you so much for the great conversation. Before you go, I have a few questions I want to fire at you. What do you always take with you on a work trip, not including phone or laptop?
just started good book because I'm very bad sleeper in hotels and I need to have a lot of pages ahead of me for the sleepless nights in hotels. And the one I'm reading now is by Joël Dicker, last one.
A real brick of a book. Very good.
I also take a book, and right now I'm reading a book called War by Other Means by Blackwell and Harris, and it shows how countries, not the EU, but are using economic tools, including trade, for geopolitical purposes.
Okay, so I'm going to change. I bring my AirPods because I like listening to music to relax, and then I bring my iPad. Doesn't count as laptop because I bring it precisely to be able to read the printed version of my favorite newspaper, Spanish El País, which I have read since I was really small.
Can you recall a moment that was truly eye-opening when you were when working in agriculture or working around agriculture?
It was many years ago. I was still a student of agriculture. I work in an American farm, a dairy farm. We went to the local supermarket and I found a bottle of a Spanish olive oil.
Jean-Marc?
Well, I would say not one, but every time I enter a farm or a dairy farm, especially because this is what I know best, what strikes me is really the dedication of farmers to their work and to what they are doing, meaning feeding a country and sometimes even more than one country.
I think I would refer to the example I gave before when I was in Vietnam, and I was very impressed by the small producers trying to really work and imitate a European way of presenting and producing products.
In another life, in another universe, what would you have been?
This is possibly the thing for which I'm the least gifted, football player.
Oh, in my dreams I would have been a professional baseball player in the USA.
I love swimming, I love traveling, so a dolphin, why not?
And final question. If you could pick one superpower, what would you pick? You can take a second.
Transportation, fast transportation, so I could go anywhere in 1 second around the world.
Repairing broken hearts.
But I'd like to say thank you very much to all three of you for the really interesting insights and the wonderful conversation. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you. Real pleasure.
Thank you.
Yes. Now I have my eye on that cheese, a little bit of olive oil on top. I'll dip my chocolate into it. Let's see what we can make here. Wonderful. Trade-off is brought to you by the European Commission.